Great. So, Danica,
Yes.
you want to start us out?
Sure, one second.
Okay.
Can you see my presentation?
Yes, I can.
Okay, great. I'll start off. Good evening, everyone. My name is Ty McCombs. I will be presenting on the evolution of big data and how industry leaders leverage big data effectively. The title of my presentation is Giants' Use of Big Data. How big is big data? Big data refers to the size, complexity, and manageability of data. Organizations have found value in effectively processing and actioning data that is on the premise or in the cloud. This data empowers their decision-making by providing data-driven evidence and patterns. Data patterns are what's most valuable because they allow them to analyze information and make informed decisions about the following: market trends, customer behavior, operations, supply chain, optimization, product development and innovation, risk management and security, financial performance, and resource allocation. Data analytics is the process of transforming raw data into actionable, insightful information. This helps identify the data patterns and trends that we previously spoke about. From these patterns, we were able to summarize that data grows in multiple ways: volume of data, which is referred to as data at rest; velocity of data speaks to data in motion; variety of data refers to data that comes in many forms; veracity of data is concerned with the data that has some doubt, called data in doubt; the veracity of data reveals red flags or uncertainties in data, such as inconsistencies, incompleteness, and deception. Big data is a collection of data patterns and trends that are monitored to better predict market growth. The application of big data will vary depending on the industry and specific needs of each company. Big data refers to the analysis of large and varied data sets. Large or small collections of data, which are the data sets, that when combined and stored exceed the capacity of traditional database tools. It involves handling, processing, and extracting valuable insights from structured and unstructured data that traditional spreadsheet software cannot accommodate. The rise of big data in 2022 has been fueled by technological advancements that enable the collection, storage, and analysis of vast amounts of data. The following are the three main phases of big data that were primarily driven by technological advancements. In the 1970s began the big data phase one that originated from database management systems, which are considered structured content. In the early 2000s began phase two that involved more data from web analytics, defined as unstructured content. In 2011 began phase three, mobile and sensor-based content, which contains data that is generated by mobile technology and devices. The big data journey began in 1801 by inventor Joseph Marie Jacquard. He paved the way for digital data with the invention of the manual punch cards. This led to the invention of the first data processing application in 1890 by inventor Hermann Hollerith. He laid the foundation of representing data digitally by processing and storing it mechanically. Further technological advancements led to the invention of the first commercial computer, the UNIVAC, in 1950. That stored up to 1 kilobyte of data. In the 1970s, mobile phones were developed. A fun fact, the first mobile phone call was made in 1973 by Martin Cooper, an engineer at Motorola. Currently, he is 95 years old, and yes, he is still living. As we currently move into 1990s, we were becoming more technical savvy. Does anyone recall the use of cassettes? They stored 200 kilobytes to 1.5 megabytes of data and were used to store audio. In business, this era introduced relational databases and data warehouses. In the 2000s, web applications added to the tremendous amounts of data already being stored. This fueled the big data revolution with the use of Hadoop and distributed computing. Data has continued to grow, mainly due to the following reasons: increased internet and mobile device usage, expansion of Internet of Things, growth of cloud computing. I'm sure we all are familiar with these four industry leaders. Their effective use of big data has boosted their investor confidence and overall company value due to a consistent competitive edge and a high potential for growth. The daily collection of data for these companies are as follows. Amazon processes 160 petabytes of data per day. Netflix processes 2.5 kilobytes of data per day. Walmart processes 40 petabytes of data per day. And Google processes 278 petabytes per month. Couldn't find a daily amount for that. This is a direct result of a diverse consumer presence that increases the potential for a diverse data pool of data. Diversity is one of the main factors driving the evolution of big data technologies and solutions. The impact that big data has on these companies, data analytical firms, and overall data generation trends has been a major influence in the economy, investment decisions, and market dynamics. Amazon is a multinational technology company that focuses on e-commerce, cloud computing, online advertising, digital streaming, and artificial intelligence. Data is collected using the following: customer purchase history, browsing behavior, search queries, product reviews, seller data, logistics information, social media sentiment, voice assistant interactions, and Internet of Things device data. Netflix is a very humble company that describes themselves as an American subscription video on demand over-the-top streaming service. Their growing subscriber base has provided data from the following content: viewer history ratings, search queries, device information, social media sentiment, demographics, viewing completion rates, eye tracking data. Walmart is an American multinational retail corporation that operates a chain of hypermarkets and stores. This conglomerate started using data analytics in the 1970s for inventory management and basic analytics. They are a well-known industry leader in retail analytics, using big data to improve customer experience and increase sales. They use various technologies to produce real-time data. They optimize the following data: sales data, social media trends, weather patterns that is used to help their truck drivers reroute to avoid weather conditions that would hinder on-time delivery, location data, customer demographics, supply chain information, in-store sensor, customer sentiment from social media and review. This industry giant also offers a Walmart Data Cafe. It is the world's largest private cloud that offers company employees access data quickly and easily, enabling them to make data-driven decisions on demand. By analyzing big data, Walmart has optimized supply chain management, improved product availability, and provide personalized recommendations to customers. Walmart is known as one of the giant leaders of leveraging big data and staying competitive in today's market. Google is an American multinational technology company focusing on artificial intelligence, online advertising, search engine technology, cloud computing, computer software, quantum computing, e-commerce, and consumer electronics. Plainly said, Google is Google. They acquire data via the following: search queries, browsing history, location data, app usage, email content, voice commands, YouTube viewing activity, wearable device data, smart home device data. Giant corporations thrive on data. We are the driving source of big data. Our human factors are what shape the responsible use and beneficial effects of future data. Here are some human factors that drive how big data is used by industry giants: ethical considerations, accessibility and skills gaps, explainability and interpretability, integration with human intelligence, technological advancements. Our diversity fuels the use of using big data effectively. With this knowledge, diverse companies leverage big data to gain a competitive edge in multiple markets. Giant corporations will continue to use big data to analyze and predict our patterns, which shape the data patterns needed to generate big data. Thank you for your time. And that's the end of my presentation tonight.
Great. Good job. That is a big topic. Believe me, I've done a lot of papers on this.
Yes, it was very interesting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I guess I get tired of, you know, if I'm searching something on the internet, then I get all these ads from, you know, Google, even, you know, Amazon and Walmart, because I usually go there if I need certain things, but like, wow.
Yeah, it's a lot. It was a lot of information to try to make it to a presentation, but it was interesting. It was very interesting. I learned a lot.
Very interesting, yes. Very good, Ty. Anybody have questions for Ty? Everyone's quiet. Yeah. Okay, well, I guess we'll go to our next speaker or presenter, and that is Brendan Faust. Are you ready, Brendan?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Wonderful. Let me get this going. Oop, not that one.
I was like that background.
Thank you. Is it sharing the right screen or is it not?
It's sharing both the right there. That one's
right
perfect.
There. That one's good. Okay.
Yes.
Alrighty. Well, I guess I'll get started on this. Hello, good. Everyone. My name is Brendan Faust, and I'm going to be presenting on the evolution of hacking. I'm just going to kind of give you guys a brief history of what had happened and how it's evolved. And also, I'm just going to kind of give you a brief introduction of what's going on today. So in the term hacking has been kind of coined as a negative connotation, and society has looked at it as hacking as a malicious act and hackers as themselves as digital thieves that will steal and let loose any malware into businesses. But however, back in the day, hackers were not really seen as villains. They were seen as in society as technological enthusiasts that wanted to be able to tinker, customize, and optimize how technology is used. Technology is just constantly evolving, and many are very, very curious about how technology still functions. But in the end of the day, malicious intent through hacking, and basically the public would see hacking as a villain act. So I'm going to be going over phreaking and the Stuxnet worm and what we see today from malware, ransomware, phishing, DDoS attacks and stuff like that. But where we're going to start is on phreaking. Phreaking is one of the most influential hacking, quote unquote, hacking parts that we see. Different companies in the government would see technology as a tool that is able to be exploited. The term phreaking comes from the words phone, free, and freak. Phreaking is the fraudulent manipulation of a telephone signal that allows the user to make free phone calls. It had began in the 60s, where certain whistles would be able to replicate the 2600 megahertz pitch that were able to be used to route different phone signals. Joe and Gracia, or Joy Bubbles, was the first to achieve this by manipulating his own whistle to the perfect pitch. After Joe and Gracie had discovered this, his friend, John Draper, was able to win the Captain Crunch Seal Prize that you find at the bottom of the box. And he was able to emit that same 2600 megahertz pitch, and he was then labeled as Captain Crunch. In the next slide, I'm going to show you how Joe and Gracie was able to manipulate the phone lines with his whistle.
Is there any sound?
Oh, is there no sound?
No sound.
Uh-oh. Hold on.
You might have to go back out and then click on that audio button.
Yeah. Oh, it's still going. Hold on. Yeah. Hold on. There it goes.
Their calls.
How about now?
In the days when calls went through
yes.
to operators.
Yes.
Cool. All right.
Phone phreaking wasn't possible. But as human switchboards were replaced by mechanical systems, different noises were used to trigger the switches. If you had perfect pitch like blind phone freak Joe and Gracia, you could whistle calls through the network.
Let's see if I make it this time. This is really hard to do. It sounded like all the tones were present, so the phone should be ringing about now. Okay, it hit the phone. It just takes a little while.
He even showed off his skills for the local media.
From his one phone to a town in Illinois and back to his other phone, a 1,000-mile phone call by whistling. Joe Ingresia said...
And that's just basically... him showing off that he's able to manipulate the phone lines. I thought it was very interesting as he was, after practicing multiple times, he finally got it down to a science where he was able to get his phone calls out pretty independently. So as phreaking would continue to gain notoriety, many people would try to replicate this process. So instead of trying to get their own whistles from the Captain Crunch box or anything like that, they would create blue boxes that were able to manipulate the phone lines at that 2600 megahertz sound. The practice would become very common in universities, and even Apple itself would make their blue boxes before they had created their own computer or the Macintosh. The International Youth Party's leader, Abby Hoffman, would be very interested in this practice as she saw this as a means to resist the monopoly that AT&T or American Telephone and Telegraph had on phone calls. By the end of the 1970s, AT&T would have projected that they lost around $30 million per year due to phreaking. In 1983, they were able to create phone lines with CCIS, or Common Channel Inter-Office Signaling, which would separate the signal from the voice line. I found it kind of interesting on how AT&T had a major response to this issue as it had become nationwide in America. And in turn, this would completely end phreaking, but personal computers and modems would start coming into as a commonplace for different households, and the freakers would transition into hacking. As the new age of hacking would come around, many college campuses, laboratories, and workplaces started to obtain computers, and different hackers would test the cybersecurity of many military installations and businesses. Most notable is the MIT Tech Model Railroad Club. They would actually hack their, quote unquote, hack their trains to modify their functions to either go faster or anything like that. They would then move from toy trains over to computers, as they found this more fascinating to innovate, explore, and expand any tasks that they had on the computers. One of the most notable achievements was from Dennis Ritchie and Keith Thompson, as they were the first to create the Unix operating system from hacking. As computers would develop in the 80s and 90s, a new phase of hacking from the government and businesses and hackers alike, there would be major attacks that would start to occur. Ransomware, worms, and self-replicating malware would be invented. These exploits would be used to siphon from banks, commit credit card fraud, and deface websites. One of the most notable incidents that had occurred was the deployment of the Morris worm, which was able to replicate itself so aggressively that over 6,000 computers in government facilities and universities would bring down the early iteration of the internet itself. It was very impactful for the government and just everywhere in general. You can kind of see that it was a floppy disk that was able to transfer all of the data onto the computer and just spread like wildfire. Next up is the 414s. Morris and the 414s would start a new wave of just national concern of hacking, as the 414s were a group of teenagers that just wanted to see what was possible with a computer and see how far they could take it, what they could do. They were able to impact internet in general, as they were able to attack with minimal equipment and intel and attack many high profile networks. They just opened the eyes of the public to see that a group of teens is able to do this. We need to be able to shore up our security. They were able to hit high profile places like the Los Alamos National Laboratory, Security Pacific National Bank, and the Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. They all had something in common. It was their OSs, as it was the Digital Equipment Corporation's VMS and RSTS/E operating systems. This was just a basic business format so that they were able to save data for different patients, different banking systems and such. After that, with the user manual on hand and just administrative oversight, they were just able to use default passwords to get in as an admin through the DEC manufacturer guides to log in to their timeshares. This just kind of shows the importance of how management and network security has evolved to protect sensitive information. The attack didn't really have any financial damage, as the 414s did not attack maliciously. Rather, they just wanted to see how far they could go. The most damages that they did do, however, was around $1,500, as some of the critical banking information from Sloan Kettering was deleted. But they just didn't want to attack maliciously. They just wanted to see how far. And moving off of that, we're going to be kind of going towards the 2010s, kind of where the Stuxnet worm was starting to become prominent. And we kind of see just the different techniques that were used, from phishing, ransomware, social engineering, malware and viruses, as they would progress in their techniques and see where we are today. The Stuxnet worm was a powerful computer worm that was able to disable key parts of the Iranian nuclear program. It was supposedly created by the U.S. and Israeli intelligence, and the worm would unexpectedly spread from the Iranian nuclear program to different computer systems outside of it. And the Stuxnet worm was a zero-day exploit, and a zero-day exploit is an attack vector that will take advantage of unaddressed or unknown security flaws that are in a computer system, hardware, firmware, or software. And today, there has only been a recorded 7,327 zero-day vulnerabilities that have been used since 1988. It's just such a low number. Not many vulnerabilities like this are very common today, as we constantly are being updated on both Windows, Apple, and such. With the Stuxnet worm, it was a 500 kilobyte worm that would be executed by plugging in a USB. The worm would first analyze and target Windows networks and the computer systems. After infiltrating, it would replicate itself and progress through the Siemens Step 7 software. As the worm would gain access to the industrial program logic controllers, the worm's creator would be able to gain access to the information that they were a building, and then also the creator would be able to operate the machinery, thus sending the Iranian nuclear program down and sending them back around 14 years. So after that, we're just going to go off into what attacks we see usually today: social engineering, XSS attacks, SQL injections, ransomware attacks, and many, many more. These attacks, even from 2010, have changed in both their techniques and philosophy, as hardware, software has changed drastically with technology as it is today. Hackers were able to adapt to all these changes, and these are kind of like the most common attacks that I have seen to this day. So going into our first attack is social engineering. Social engineering is one of the most easier methods, as it relies on human error. To tie in with this, it's usually phishing and tailgating. Phishing is those funny little emails that some employees will get stating like, I'll need your username and password for such and such application. And they usually will hit them with a time crunch or something to manipulate their emotions to keep them to send information and to give them access to different parts of the company. Usually ransomware will be linked in with a lot of this, as they will be able to receive access to this information, and they would bring in an added step of locking the information to receive some sort of payment for the information to not be released or to gain access back into this information. Next up, we have the XSS attacks. It's a type of injection attack that will inject malicious code by using a browser side script. The perpetrator will usually discover a website that will be able to have script injections. Then he will be able to inject the website with malicious code. And when someone decides to visit the website, the script is activated, giving the visitor's information over to the attacker. There was actually a recent attack on Counter-Strike 2. I played that a lot back in December of last year. I'm going to show you another video just kind of explaining what was going on in Counter-Strike. It's not a very professional video. I found it off of one of my YouTubers that I usually kind of watch. But he does a very good job on going over the different parts of how the attack occurred and how easy it was for the perpetrator to gain information on their attackers.
What up, everybody? I regret to inform you that CS is not safe to play right now. I was browsing YouTube earlier and I got this recommended to me: Counter-Strike 2 XSS exploit IP capturer. This is a video demonstrating the current XSS exploit that's in CS2 right now. The individual in the video literally just calls a vote and has his name as some HTML code, and this enables him to grab the IPs from people in the server. He's using a PHP script posing as an image, and I am told there are far worse things that you can do with this exploit than just capture people's IPs. People in the comments seem to think that it was already sent to Valve like a week ago, but I'd imagine as soon as Valve know about this, this should be top priority. Various people have messaged me on Discord about it. You can pretty much do anything you can do on a website with it. So for example, download an executable, and people are starting to rat CS2 community servers again, so Be careful there. He told me the best bet is to keep your antivirus on and pray. If you get something along these lines, you know to avoid the server. And this is just an example image of the antivirus picking up quite clearly a download from a map in community servers. And if you didn't trust your own eyes and other people messaging me on Discord, you should probably trust this guy.
100% is XSS. I would not play. I would not play CS right now. You are 100% vulnerable to this until they fix it. Do not play that game right now. And that is coming from a security expert. I've been a hacker for 20 years. This is incredibly easy to pull off. It's incredibly easy, and you don't want this. The fact that this is now spreading very rapidly and people know how to do it, that's a serious one. It's very easy to pull off. Yeah, script kiddie level easy. Very simple. Yeah, they should turn the game off until they fix this, legitimately.
This video isn't going to have any fancy editing or anything like that. I wanted to...
And I'm just going to cut it off there because he just kind of goes on and on about how not to play on CSGO and such. But lastly, we're just going to get into SQL injections. It's another injection technique that is able to gain unauthorized access to a web application database by adding a string of malicious code to the database query. So he will just find a website that is able to have an SQL-driven injection possible. Then they will be able to validate and command it and execute inside of the database to get access to different records and possibly give him administrator privileges within that website database. But other than that, that's just going to be what I have for you today. I was just wondering if you guys had any questions or anything that I have come across I can possibly answer. But yeah, that's about it.
Good job. I like that.
Thank you.
Good information. Yeah. Especially about some of the history of hacking. Because, you know,
yeah,
I've been researching that myself. Although I don't really want to be, you know, a hacker. Because to me, it's, you know. Yeah, I don't know. I just feel like guilty. If I did any hacking, I'd be feeling guilty all the time. And that's not, I can't live like that. So I don't even try it.
Yeah. No, I gotcha. I did not finish my CEH. I'm going for Penetration Plus through, whatchamacallit. Wow.
Pentester.
Think of the word. Yeah. CompTIA. Thank you.
Uh-huh. That's okay.
Yeah. But yeah.
Yep. Sounds good. Anybody have questions for Brandon? No? No questions? Well, everyone's quiet. Don't worry, I won't call on you unless you're on the list. Okay. Now, let's see. We have the next person on the list is Jiang Zhu. I hope I'm not killing your name.
Jiang Zhu.
Jiang Zhu.
That's good. Yes.
Okay. I was trying to remember how things sound like, because I have a Chinese name, so I understand. <Okay. laughs> But how long is your talk?
It's going to be like 10, 12 minutes.
Can it be longer?
A little bit longer than 10, yeah.
Okay. The reason I'm asking is Joseph Brady is after you, and he's still in his seminar class. So he said he'll be coming after he finished. He's currently in a seminar.
Okay.
Let's see. I will not be able to join the meeting for a presentation until after 8 Central. Yeah, so it has to be, you have to hang in there until 8. Do you think you can do that?
So until 8, that's going to be until 9.
Until 9, right, on Eastern Standard Time.
Okay, yeah.
Okay. So go ahead and we're ready for you. The Internet of Things. That's a big topic, so that should be good information there.
Hopefully.
Thank you, Brandon, though. Okay. Are you needing help, Jiang Su? Jiang Su? Hello?
I'm sorry. I'm here. I'm still here trying to figure out what's back in. Sorry.
Oh, okay. Because then, basically, you have it on slideshow?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, yeah, because right, then if you hit share in the Teams.
I don't know if you're able to see now.
Not yet.
Permission and start sharing. Okay. I'm just going to share the entire screen here. Are you able to see it now?
Not yet.
Okay. From OneDrive, I'll try to do it from OneDrive. Is it working now?
Yes, I see Internet of Things. Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's good. Okay, I'll start with it now.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. Okay, hello everyone. My name is Jiang Su Park. I would like to talk about the Internet of Things today, IoT. I chose this topic because I thought this is an interesting topic for me and honestly for myself to be more familiar with it. But at the same time, I'm conducting this class to let you know what the IoT is, and to let you know how things work in IoT. Agenda, first thing I would like to talk about is what is the IoT and how does it work? Then we will talk about the real world applications of the IoT, benefits and challenges of the IoT, a brief history of IoT, and lastly about the future of the IoT. These are the references that I use. what is the IoT? In a short sentence, IoT is a network of physical devices embedded with sensors, software, and internet connectivity, allowing them to collect data, communicate, and interact with each other and the surrounding environment. IoT is connecting devices in your room to a network and enable those devices to send and receive data. There are devices just like smartwatches, thermostats, and light bulbs that have sensors that became smart devices. Important thing with this fact is that IoT made things possible for automation, efficiency, and innovation. For example, you can think about your coffee maker brewing as you approach, or your lights adjusting automatically based on the time of the day. That is the power of the IoT, where physical objects transcend their traditional functions and become part of a larger intelligent network. So just like I said in the last slide, there are sensors embedded in each device that detects temperature, motion, or location. These devices connect to the internet through wireless functions. Then the data will be sent to cloud platform. Lastly, those are communicated back to devices or users for desired actions. There are different types of real-world applications applications of the IoT. The IoT is transforming industries, optimizing cities, and even revolutionizing healthcare. Think about the factories with self-repairing machines, you know, cities that adjust traffic lights based on real-time data and personalized healthcare tailored to your, tailored to your unique needs. So let's talk more about it in specific. First one is the smartphones, smart homes, smart devices relate to each other and can be accessed through one central point, just like automated lighting, temperature control, and security systems. These can be controlled with a smartphone, tablet, or laptop. Second example is the wearable technology, such as the smart watches and smart rings. Those have health data tracker functions. Also, it helps improving smartphones connectivity. Connected city, this is also known as smart cities. Is a city that works like a giant smartphone. So it is like putting sensors, networks, and smart systems to make everything run smoother, from traffic lights to garbage cans. In Barcelona, Spain, they have implemented smart systems for waste management, energy efficiency, and citizen participation. There is also an article stating that Barcelona is one of the world's leading smart cities. This city has Beijing, B-I-C-I-N-G. I don't know why they pronounce it that way, but it's different, which is the Barcelona's extensive bike sharing system to reduce car usage and smooth transportation. Sensorized parking. There are sensors that detect available parking spaces in real time. This allows people to save time from driving around searching for spots. And another thing is the intelligent street lighting, which has street lights that adjust their brightness based on pedestrian presence. This saves energy and enhances security. The last one I have here on the slide, industrial IoT. When we talk about the industrial, this applies to industries like manufacturing, energy transportation, etc. But the industrial IoT has devices and machines connect to the internet to collect and share data. For example, manufacturer quality control has cameras and sensors embedded in production lines, continuously inspect products, ensuring consistent quality and identifying defects early in the process. So smartwatches and thermostats are familiar examples. There are some inventors who have tried connecting things like deodorant dispensers and pet feeders to the internet. I thought this was pretty interesting too. The IoT has lots of benefits, but at the same time, it has challenges. Since it is a new technology, if we use the IoT, we can get the benefit, just like reducing costs from automation, improved productivity, and business opportunities. But at the same time, it has challenges, just like security vulnerabilities, privacy concerns, data ownership issues, and social inequality. This means as the technology grows, we need security measures, clear data privacy regulations, and ethical considerations to ensure this technology benefit everyone equally and responsibly. Okay, surprisingly, the history of the IoT starts from 1970s. Between 1970s and 1990s, the idea of interconnected devices emerges with technologies like embedded systems and RFID tags. From 1990s through 2000s, devices start connecting to the internet, paving the way for remote monitoring and control. The Internet of Things sounds like a new technology, but the term first coined in 1999 by computer scientist Kevin Ashton while he was working at Procter & Gamble. He proposed putting radio frequency identification, RFID chips, on products to track them through a supply chain. Between 2000s and 2010s, the web connectivity awakens. Smaller, cheaper sensors enabled wider adoption of IoT devices. And starting from 2010s and until present, cloud platforms provide storage, processing power, and analytics for IoT data, unlocking new possibilities. The IoT has come a long way like this, making our lives more convenient, efficient, and even safer. Then let's see how it's going to be in the future. The IoT is continuing to grow. We see that the number of connected IoT devices is estimated to reach 25.4 billion by 2030. Impacting almost every aspect of our lives. There are also some unexpected applications like smart farming. It is like putting sensors on the equipment to monitor everything from soil moisture to livestock health to optimize resources and increasing yields. For example of smart farming, there are self-driving tractors and drone surveillance. And we expect that advancements in artificial intelligence, edge computing, and 5G will enhance connectivity and automation. Just like I stated in the last slide, ethical considerations and responsible development is very important when we talk about the IoT now. So concluding this brief, Learning about IoT has opened up my eyes to the potential of technology to improve our lives, but it's also raised important questions about privacy, security, and inequality. As students in the IT field, let's work together to ensure that IoT develops in a way that benefits everyone and safeguard our values. Thank you for attending this brief. Any questions here?
Good job. Good job.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's a really broad topic. So,
it is, really.
Yeah. Well, they used this in a movie. I don't know how, you know, they were just faking it probably because I don't think technology was there yet. That one movie, something about the earth. And it was, you know, they're growing crops and then they sent people off to find a better planet to, you know, grow crops. Because then the earth was not being able to produce crops. Forgot what that movie was called.
I don't know either.
I don't know. But yeah, when I think of it, but yeah, that's probably be too late. But yeah, I like watching these, you know, sci-fi type movies. Oh, Enoch said it was Interstellar. It's probably, it's the one because I did watch that one more than once. Michael saying the office space printer. Maybe. Rhea says Back to the Future. Yeah. Oh, gone, baby. Oh, any questions? Do we have any questions? Sorry about that. So I guess no questions. Michael was saying that. Who was saying that? Oh, he was responding to someone else's information. Okay, so let's go on then. Thank you so much for presenting. I appreciate that.
I'm gonna stop sharing here now.
Okay, you can stop sharing. Hey Joseph, are you here? Joseph Brady. He was in our chat, so someone say he is, so it's your turn for your presentation. All right. I saw him in our chat, but I don't see him in our list. Oh, what did I do that for? Chat. Yeah, we'll just wait a little while. Sorry about that. If you need to go, you can go, but I'll wait for him so he can present. You want to talk about movies with hackers, Brendan? The hacker movie. The one with the young kids.
The one with the young kids? Oh, like the...
It's just called 14? Hackers. Yeah, oh, it's just called Hackers. Yeah, yeah. It's really, you know, they say, oh, this has so much speed and this, and I was like, no, that's not, it's, you know, it's not fast anymore.
Yeah, I forget that they actually did an actual movie for the 414s. They were...
Oh, did they?
Yeah, they did. Shoot, what was the name called?
I'd be interested in that one.
Yeah, let me look it up real quick, because I can't quite remember what it was called.
Sorry, I had my mic on.
Zone 414. That was their movie.
What was it called again?
Zone 414.
Zone 414. Okay.
Yeah. Or maybe
let me write this down. Zone.
No, sorry. The 414s. It's legitimately just the 414s. I looked up a different one.
Okay, got it.
Cool.
Yeah. Although I'm interested in a topic, but I don't want to do it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I remember in my class, my instructor was telling us to go to a parking lot and, you know, grab as many packets, you know, that you can. So I did that, and I felt so guilty about it. I was like, oh, I can't, you know.
No, I get it. Yeah. I find just the art of, I guess, hacking in general to be just really interesting. So I just kind of branched off to that.
Yeah, it is interesting, but it's not not something that I could, you know, survive doing myself. Yeah,
it's very ethically challenging. Yeah,
I like playing at it, because then there was some a program long time ago. It was just called Hacker, and it gave you, well, it doesn't give you any instructions. Basically, you try to hack through some systems, but and if you know got anywhere, then they'll tell you if you got in or not. But you can tell by getting into the things. But I didn't do that very long because I felt guilty again. So it's like,
no, I
think
it,
I'm done with that.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I think someone said that Joe's back.
Oh, Joe's
yes.
here.
Yes, I'm here. I'm here, finally. I'm sorry.
We were waiting only a little while.
My professor was playing like 30 minutes of videos in a 45-minute seminar.
Uh-oh. Not good. What class was this for?
I'm in the IT consulting class right now at the same time. Oh. So it the seminar runs concurrently with the masterclass presentation. So.
Yep, I know that. So, no, I appreciate you letting me know that you were going to come anyway. And so we just waited a few minutes, not too long, okay. Less than five. So we were just talking about hacking and, you know, Internet of Things. Yep.
Okay.
Things like that. Okay, so
I missed everybody else's presentations.
Well, you can always, you know, listen to the video or watch the recording.
Yeah, I probably will. Like. Some of the topics looked pretty interesting tonight. Mm-hmm. So.
It was very interesting. Yep.
All right. I've got my screen up. Can you guys see it?
Yes, I do.
Okay. All right. Let me go ahead and get my recording started on this end so I can save this for later. All right. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Today I will be exploring one of the most fascinating frontiers in modern medicine and technology, bionic limbs. From ancient civilizations' rudimentary attempts to replicate lost limbs. Oh, sorry. My teleprompter got ahead of me there. From ancient civilizations' rudimentary attempts to replicate lost limbs to the cutting-edge advancements of the 21st century,
The evolution of prosthetic technology has been nothing short of remarkable. Imagine a world where artificial limbs not only restore function, but also offer capabilities beyond the human body's natural limits. A world where amputees can run, grasp, and even feel with prosthetic limbs that seamlessly integrate into their lives. Today, we delve into the realm of bionic limbs, where science fiction becomes reality, and where the boundaries of human potential are continually redefined. In this presentation, we'll go over a brief history of prosthetics, discuss how bionic limbs function. I've got a short video to show you introducing the psionic ability hand, which is one of the most advanced prosthetics on the market. Then I'll go into some future developments that could enhance the functionality of this limb and follow that up with a brief conclusion and time for questions. I chose this topic because it's very near and dear to me. Being in the military, I've met a lot of people who have lost limbs and are unable to perform jobs that they enjoy or other functions that they enjoy. So I felt like this was a good topic to explore that. So as for the history of prosthetics, ancient prosthetics, including toe replacements from Egypt, date back to between 2600 and 3400 years ago. Early prosthetics like the Cairo toe were functional, while others like the Greville Chester toe were likely cosmetic. Roman prosthetic advancements, such as the Capua leg, made of bronze and wood, date back to 300 BC. The Middle Ages saw the use of wooden limbs by knights, while the 16th century introduced functional prosthetics by Ambrosia Paré. The American Civil War, 1860s, led to a surge in prosthetic innovation, with patents like the hanger limb introducing rubber for comfort. By the late 19th century, France and Switzerland developed more functional limbs using gears and springs. World War I spurred prosthetic manufacturing, making advanced devices accessible to more people. The 20th century brought plastics and other modern materials to prosthetic design, improving functionality and accessibility. Current research, supported by NIH, focuses on integrating robotics, AI, motion sensing, tech, and prosthetics for natural movement. Initiatives like the Limb Loss Preservation Registry aim to track prosthetic usage for improved care. So, how do bionic limbs function? Bionics function by sending and receiving electronic signals to and from muscles and nerves utilizing sensors. Technologies such as electromyography or EMG sensors detect electrical signals generated by muscles in the residual limb. By measuring muscle activity, EMG sensors can translate the user's intended movements into commands for the prosthetic device. These can either be implanted within the muscle, known as intramuscular EMG, or on the surface of the muscle, surface EMG, SEMG. Other technologies such as inertial measurement units, or IMUs, include technologies like you find in your smartphone, such as gyroscopes, accelerometers, and sometimes magnetometers, which can measure the orientation, acceleration, and rotational motion of a prosthetic limb. IMUs provide real-time data to the limb's position and movement, aiding in balance, stability, and gesture recognition. Force sensors measure the amount of force applied to the prosthetic limb, enabling feedback on grip strength and object manipulation. These sensors can detect changes in pressure and adjust the prosthetic's grip accordingly to prevent damage and improve dexterity. Tactile sensors detect contact and pressure on the surface of the prosthetic limb or fingertips. They provide sensory feedback to the user, allowing them to perceive an object's texture, hardness, and temperature, enhancing their ability to interact with their environment. These are commonly referred to as haptics and are similar in nature to the functions of a video game controller, providing real-time feedback to the user. Pressure sensors are embedded within the socket or interface of bionic prosthetic limbs to detect pressure distribution and contact points with the residual limb. They help optimize socket fit, prevent discomfort or skin breakdown, and improve overall comfort and usability of the prosthetic device. These sensors work in tandem with microprocessors, actuators, and control algorithms to create bionic limbs capable of adaptive, natural movement, and sensory feedback, significantly enhancing the user's mobility, functionality, and quality of life. Now I have a brief video showcasing the Psionic Ability Hand and the amazing capabilities it can provide to the user. Enjoy.
Psionics are redefining the future of prosthetics.
It might sound like the stuff of...
Can everybody hear this?
Amputees can now buy a bionic hand created by a U of I alumnus.
I think so, yes.
For a bargain.
But that doesn't begin to describe just how cool this thing is.
Picture this, a bionic hand that can move just like a real one and feels like a real one too.
It's hoping to touch lives of those who may not otherwise be able to afford this type of technology.
Now, this could really change everything for amputees.
I'm Adil Akhtar, and I built a bionic hand company. We call it Psionic. We build advanced bionic limbs that are affordable and accessible for everyone. The whole thing started when I was 7 years old. My parents are from Pakistan, and I was visiting, and that's the first time I met someone with a limb difference. She was my age, living in poverty, missing her right leg and using a broken tree branch as a crutch. That's what inspired me to want to go into this field and develop these advanced bionic limbs that would be affordable and accessible to others around the entire world. In the summer of 2014, as I was doing my PhD, we got the chance of a lifetime to go down to Quito, Ecuador, and work with a patient named Juan Suquillo, who lost his left hand 35 years prior due to a border war between Ecuador and Peru. You have to imagine, the prototype of the Ability Hand at that time was 3 times the size of a normal human hand. It had wires going everywhere, plugged into breadboards, plugged into power supplies, plugged into the wall. Despite that, Juan said in front of international news stations that a part of him had come back. He was able to make a pinch for the first time in 35 years. And that's when we realized, if we want everyone to feel the exact same way that Juan did, the only way we could do that was to commercialize our technology. And that's when Psionic was born. Back in the US, we met retired US Army Sergeant Garrett Anderson, who used a hook on a daily basis. This is technology that hasn't changed since the Civil War era of the United States. We believe that our veterans deserve better. And so we upgraded Garrett to the 21st century. Now he has superhuman abilities. He can rotate his wrist in 360 degrees. He can even charge his phone from his arm. But what we built was just a prototype. We needed to make a prosthetic hand that would survive whatever life threw at you. Tina wants to be able to feed her granddaughter. Garrett wants to be able to do work out in his yard. Cody wants to return back to the farm. This requires a hand that is robust to impact, that can feel, that's water resistant, and is also lightweight and very strong. And we built the Ability Hand to be just that. To give users the best experience, we developed the Ability Hand to be the fastest bionic hand in the world. It closes faster than the blink of an eye. It's also the first to give users touch feedback. So when Sergeant Anderson holds his daughter's hand, he can actually feel it. And so over the last 6 to 7 years, we've gone through 8 different prototypes and field tested all of them. I'm so excited to show you the next generation of the Ability Hand. And here it is, the brand new Ability Hand. You can control it with your muscles, but it also has Bluetooth on it, so there's an app for it on both Android and iOS. And so all five fingers flex and extend, and the thumb rotates as well. And you can do different grips with it. So here's a key grip, or if you want to give someone, you know, a thumbs up. You can do individual finger movements. So here's a precision pinch. You can do a tripod grasp. If you're at a rock concert, you can rock on. You can also do individual finger pointing. And yes, you can point with other fingers too. The fingers are made out of a flexible silicone and rubber, so they can take a beating. It's also made of lightweight carbon fiber to make it super light and super strong. It's USB-C rechargeable, so the same way you plug in your phone, you can plug in your arm. In fact, you can charge your phone from your arm as well, a superhuman ability we like to give our users. In the index finger, the pinky, and the thumb, we have touch sensors that relate to a vibration motor that's in the socket, so our users know when they've grabbed an object, how hard they've grabbed an object, and when they've let go of it. The best part, though, is it's actually covered by Medicare in the U.S. We have expanded access to advanced bionic limbs from 10% of people who could afford it to 75% of the U.S. population. This technology is no longer a prototype. In fact, you won't even believe what you'll be able to do with this ability hand, what you're going to be seeing us do over the next couple of months. We are redefining what it means to be human for so many individuals across the U.S. and across the world. Come join our bionic revolution.
Bionics are redefining
the... Sorry about that. I guess I didn't have the trigger set right there. Next slide. All right. So how did everybody enjoy that video?
That was amazing.
Yeah, it's a remarkable technology. I'd love to, you know, go to work for that company or something, because it's amazing what they're doing, and, you know, all the people that can benefit from it.
Yes, definitely. I like the idea that he said that no matter if you're, you know, rich or poor, you'll get be able to get it.
Right. And, you know,
because I'm on really the poor side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They didn't talk about it too much in the video. But if you notice, there was a gentleman picking up an eggshell.
I know. That was really cool.
He was blindfolded. And there's a lot more videos. Those eggshells are actually empty. There's nothing in that egg. So it's extremely fragile. But because of the touch sensors that are in those fingertips and the feedback that they get in their residual limb, they can actually pick up that eggshell without cracking it.
Wow.
Yeah, it's truly remarkable. All right. Carrying on. So... next up, we're going to discuss a couple of the future developments that could enhance this technology. Potential future enhancements to bionic limb replacements include technologies such as voice commands, utilizing technologies such as voice recognition and even integration of artificial intelligence. Direct neural interface is also on the horizon, which would allow the prosthesis to communicate directly with the user's central nervous system. Enhanced sensory feedback, which would allow the user to perceive temperature, texture, and the limb's position and movement relative to the body. Machine learning can enhance the functionality of the prosthetic over time, enabling the device to learn from the wearer's behavior and movement. Additional advancements to energy harvesting technologies could reduce or potentially eliminate the need to charge the prosthetic limb, as the user's movement could be harnessed to generate power for the device. All right. And finally, our conclusion. So just to review what I've discussed today, the evolution of bionic limbs is truly fascinating, blending ancient wisdom with cutting-edge technology. And each prosthetic limb tells a compelling story of courage and resilience. We are witnessing a constant evolution in prosthetic technology. and companies like Psionic are leading the charge, redefining solutions for amputees. Psionic's work isn't just about providing prosthetic options. It's about empowering individuals who have lost a limb, restoring their confidence, and opening a world of possibilities. By producing affordable bionic limbs and making them accessible to more people who have lost an appendage, Psionic is changing the status quo of prosthetics. Bionic limbs are more than just tools. They're symbols of empowerment, pushing the boundaries of human capability, and showcasing the incredible resilience of the human spirit. This journey reminds us of the power of human determination and innovation, inspiring us to continue pushing the limits of what we can achieve. Do we have any questions? Tanika?
I didn't have a question. I just wanted to say that was an amazing presentation. It was very interesting. I love, my son is thinking of going to school for bionics. So we've been reading over a few things, artificial intelligence, trying to figure out what he would like to do. And your presentation tonight was right on course with that. I will definitely be showing him this presentation when it's available.
Okay. Thank you. Well, I have a recommendation for you. So have you ever heard of Hacksmith on YouTube?
Yes, I have.
So they recently released a video where they got a hold of one of these psionic ability hands, and they actually made a special version for a young kid who had lost his arm. And I strongly recommend you go check it out. It's really cool. They basically turned it into something straight out of a comic book.
That's cool. Me and my son were looking at a company in California that creates the bionic. What was it? It wasn't an arm. It was what was it? But it was just like it just imitated skin where you could feel the. And it was just so cool. So it's just a very interesting subject. I thank you.
Yeah, I know there's a couple companies that are working on a bionic skin that can, you know, let kind of, you know, something you would see in a Star Trek or Star Wars movie.
Yeah.
where the hairs on the skin raise up when it's cold, something crazy like that. So it's definitely interesting.
Yeah, it was so cool to see, but yeah.
All right, anybody else? All right, no further questions. I'll go ahead and show my final slide here, which is just the references resource here. There is a link on here if anybody wants to take note of it. For the Psionic YouTube channel. They've got a lot more videos that you can check out if you're interested in this topic. And I'll leave you with that.
Cool. Good job. Good job. Everyone still did a good job on their presentations today. Wonderful. Appreciate it.
All right. Well, I hope everybody has a good night. Sorry to keep you guys waiting while I was in that other class.
Oh, no. That was fine. And if there's no other questions, you're free to go. Thank you for coming to our meeting.
All right. Have a good night.
Hold on, everyone. Good night.
Good night. Thank you, Joe.
No problem.
That was nice. I like your last screen, you know, where they shaking their hand with a bionic arm.
Yeah, that was actually one that I found through PowerPoint. It was you know how you can search online pictures on there, and you can limit it to just the Creative Commons pictures.
Yes.
I just searched prosthetic, and that came up, and I'm like, that is the perfect picture for the end slide.
That is good. Yeah, I like that one. Because that kind of reminded me of this old program that I used to watch a long time ago. the bionic man, then later on the woman.
Yeah, that's why I actually named the presentation on that one.
Cool. I was wondering about that. Yeah.
I was discussing it with Marjorie a little bit. And I had like three different subject lines or titles that I was going to try. And she voted for the Bionic Man.
Oh, yeah. Bionic Man is good. Yeah. Because then it's been in the process. I've been watching some different videos on that. So I didn't know that they actually had a company that was so close to, you know, getting it for people.
Well, there's actually several companies right now.
Really?
This was just one that I chose to focus on because this one is the only one that, like they said in the video, they can actually feel things.
Yeah, I like that idea.
They have that the pressure sensors and the haptic feedback that allows the person wearing the limb to actually feel what they're touching.
Do they have for feet?
I don't believe they've worked on that yet. I'm sure they're developing something.
I hope so.
Because this company is really amazing, and you know something they didn't really mention was like. You know, most computers, it's a computer, so it has to receive updates, right? You know, as they find bugs in the code or anything like that, or they want to push new features, they have to push updates. So it actually updates itself through the app on your smartphone.
Oh, wow.
So the app will download the firmware for the device and then push it via Bluetooth.
So hopefully they do that at night. When they're sleeping.
Yeah. Well, the device is charging.
Yeah, when the device is charging, that would be nice.
I'm sure you can set your off hours or something in the app. I don't know how detailed it is.
Well, I was wondering because since I am diabetic and it's a real thing when you know you lose your toes or lose a limb or something, because I had a friend of mine has a brother and he lost one leg, and then they wanted to chop off the other leg to save his life, but he didn't want that to happen, so he didn't do it and he died.
Oh, that's a shame.
I know. So I was thinking if they had something, you know, for the toes and, you know, legs and stuff, that would be, he would probably, you know, benefit from that. But
well, see, I have a feeling that legs and toes wouldn't be quite as advanced as the arm, just because, I mean, you don't often
should be
feel
easier
things,
to do.
Right. Yeah. You don't often do a whole lot of touching things with your toes. You know what I mean?
In order to walk, you have to touch. Yeah. You have to feel your feet.
Right.
So.
Right, and the big, like if you lose a big toe, that's a major contributor to your balance.
Yeah.
So having something like that would provide sensory feedback.
Yeah, I've been practicing on balancing without my toe, my big toe, just in case, because you never know.
Yeah, that might keep an eye on your sugar because, I mean, that's one of the major contributors to diabetic amputation.
Yeah, I know. And so that's, you know, one thing I worry about sometimes.
Yeah. Here's to hoping they've someday come out with a permanent treatment for diabetes.
Yeah, well, big, you know, with the pharmaceutical companies, I don't think that will happen. Because they're getting, if you think about how much money they get from prescribing all these meds to diabetics, it's awful. Right. I told my doctor, does he want me to go on insulin? I said, no, I will not.
I'm glad that they finally capped the price of insulin
for
insulin-dependent diabetics because it was getting ridiculous.
Well, it's very bad because when they start not taking their insulin because they can't afford it.
Well, that was actually the case with my I had a foster sister growing up, and she got married to this guy. They had a couple kids, And he was at work one day, and I don't know if it was that he couldn't really afford his medication or if he just forgot to refill it. So he had one of those pumps.
Oh.
The ones that it wasn't really one that measured your glucose, but it was just like a pump that you could push a button on and it triggers.
Oh, I see. Uh-huh.
And so he sat down at work on his lunch break and fell asleep. Never woke up.
Not good.
Yeah, it's.
So he didn't get any insulin.
Pretty much, yeah. That's what they were thinking.
Hmm. Yeah. Sounds like he was type 1 diabetes, maybe.
Yes, insulin dependent. Yeah.
Yeah, very. Because type 1 is the bad one.
Right. Type 1's insulin dependent. Type 2 mm-hmm. is dietary regulation.
Yeah. Cool. Well, that's interesting.
But yeah, it'd be interesting to see what else they can come up with. Because, I mean,
that would be.
They just really released this arm technology a couple years ago.
Uh-huh.
And like you said, a foot or a toe or a leg would mm-hmm. probably be a little bit simpler because there's not as much articulation.
It's just about walking and feeling your feet when you walk, because then you can't just walk anywhere because, you know, there's safety concerns.
Yeah. Uh-huh. But, you know, there's one thing that a bionic toe or a bionic foot could do without. And I'm just throwing this out there. You know that feeling when you stub your toe on the corner of a bed post or something like that?
I've had that happen. Yeah. You don't really want to feel that.
Right. They could block that sensation. Nobody wants that
one. Right. Yeah. But I was just thinking, like, you know, if you're trying to, you know, do things, and you know, you have to walk, you know, take your dog for a walk or something, you know, you can't just walk without feeling, or I don't think that you could. I don't know. I just can't imagine it. Yeah.
I think that the main thing for the leg and the foot is balance. That's the balance.
That's the main part I'm worried about. Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Definitely. That's what I'm practicing without my big toe and balance without it. But, you know, it's easier to say I can practice, but that doesn't mean it's going to happen. I mean, you know, do I really, you know, can balance without it? I don't think so. I mean, because they take more than, you know, certain muscles on your foot, you know, when they do that. So I don't know.
I think normally when they amputate that portion of the foot, they would actually cut it back by the metatarsals.
Yeah, I know. And so I'm thinking, well, I think I want more of my foot there than not. Because then, anyway, it's like, yucky. All right. I don't want to keep you, Joe.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna go do some planner tasks.
Thank you for presentation and answering my questions. So. All right.
All right. Have a good night.
Good night.
Bye.
Do you have a second, Charlene?
Yes, I saw your note, Michael.
Got it. So I received an email from Marjorie saying that it seems that she suggests that I moved over to the cyber department. I believe you're in charge of that one.
Yes. Well, with Eric. Uh-huh.
Gotcha. So how do I go about that process since she recommended that to me on the 14th?
On the 14th? I would – who's your, what department are you in now?
Cloud/IT support.
Oh, okay. So I would suggest talking to the manager in your department. Because they would have to change you over.
Got it. So I think that's, I don't know. So she sent the email to me and Jun Shao, and she CC'd Margaret Medina. I'm guessing that she's the manager in my department.
Maybe, yeah. So, yeah. Because then Jun is the mentor in the department. He's helping out. So I would definitely CC them and also Marjorie. So, you know, everyone can be on the same page. And then, because then you have to get Marcia and Marjorie involved as well. But I think that's when Margaret comes in and says to Marcia or Marjorie and have you, you know, change over.
So Marjorie is the one who directly sent me the email saying, hey, I suggest you do this.
Right. Now, so, does she give you steps to do or just say you should be in cyber?
Her email says, hi, Michael. This seems fine. I can just share my screen so you can see it, actually.
Oh, okay. Sure.
Okay.
It's coming. Okay. Let's see. Field of training, then in IT support and cloud. Okay, what did you tell Marjorie before? I mean,
oh well, basically, I'm already, you know, CompTIA Sec Plus certified. I'm trying to do a job called maritime cyber warfare in the Navy. Yep. And I already bought the they were going to give me the voucher for Try Hack Me. But I already bought the I already have a subscription to EC Council, which I paid, you know, a good bit of money for already. So I said, hey, can I use that? And they gave me the OK. And that's after that, she recommended this.
Oh, I see. Are you in the Army?
Navy, ma'am.
The Navy. OK, sorry. Do they give you a free access to certain sites like let's see who I remember talking to someone and he had free sites to go
Yeah, they give us like a yearly voucher or something along the lines of that.
Oh, well, that's nice. So you can do those as well. So that'd be good. We could certainly get you into that as well, and then work on your EC Council things.
Yeah, I mean that's well over 100 hours of work in that thing. So, and that is my SMART goal, is to get that cert knocked out.
Definitely takes a little while. Yeah.
But I guess the other thing is that we talked week one about me being involved in the disaster recovery project, and I haven't heard much about that yet.
Oh, okay. Because they had a really short meeting. I didn't get to attend myself because by the time I got there, because I was with another intern talking about things. And when I got finished with him, then I tried to find the meeting and they were already done with the meeting. But there is a recording. Let me share my screen with you.
Okay.
Then I can show you where to go. Oh, sorry. This is the other thing. I need to go here. Oh, not that one. We go to our Teams icon here. Then we go all the way down to, where was it? Oh, I guess not cyber. Let's see if there's more tabs. Oh, maybe it's further down. Let me look some more. Sorry about that.
No worries.
Because I keep moving things. I was like, where did they put it?
Yeah. Oh, right here. It's very unforgiving if you click the wrong thing, Microsoft Teams.
Yes. So you go to the meeting site here. They should have the videos here. Nope, I don't see it. Maybe it's under General's files. Well, those are documents. Okay.
Yeah, I see that I'm
soft dev. That's a problem. I think I'm in the wrong spot. Sorry.
So I see I got added to the meeting now. That's going to be on at 10 a.m. on 10 a.m. on Thursday's my time. I guess that's 8 p.m. Wednesday's your time.
Oh, wow. Where are you?
I'm in Japan.
Oh, you're in Japan. No wonder. Well, it's supposed to be up in this screen area here, but I can't seem to see it. So maybe go down to meetings again.
Yeah.
Huh. Maybe it's within the comments. Ah, here it is. This is the one. 19 minutes.
Okay, so.
No, that's not the right one. 117. This, we're looking for 214. 214.
You know what I just did? I clicked on the calendar. I opened up the meeting. I hit view recap. And they have the recap right on there.
Oh, perfect then. Let me look and see if I can find mine.
Yeah, so if you go to the calendar.
Uh-huh. This one?
All right.
Yep, click on it. Down a little bit down, I think. Yep, then what did I do? Let me check real quick.
I don't know. I don't see my recap thing.
So I clicked on the meeting. I just clicked on the meeting, then view recap popped up. It was like, it showed like, maybe if you click at the top of it. Yeah, there it is. I think, maybe.
This one doesn't have it. It has the, this is the link for the meeting. And then chat with participants. They don't really, maybe I'll ask them for a new one.
I don't know. I mean, I can show you on my side what it looks like, if you would like.
Oh, yeah, sure. Let me stop sharing. I'll stop sharing. All right. Go ahead and share your screen so I can see what you see.
All right. Can you see the Maya now?
Yeah.
So I click here. Then it says view recap.
Oh. I'll have to look for that one.
Okay, but
that view anyway. Okay.
All right. Yeah, those are all the questions I had. Thank you very much for your time, ma'am.
Oh, no problem, Michael. Anytime.
All right. Thank you. Have a good night.
You good night too. Anybody else have questions? Since you guys are still here. I'm going to end the recording.